I think it's marginally better than it's been for some years. Bethlehem is beginning to see a resurgence of tourism, and of course that Bethlehem's entire economy is based on tourism, and so that is changing the attitude positively. At the same time, we're trapped behind the barrier, the wall, whatever name you want to use for it, and that makes people that live here or just live in Bethlehem as their small jail that they can move around in, and that's the limit of their ability to move freely without explicit permission from the Israelis.
You talked about the resurgence of tourism. Do you have any idea how many pilgrims have come or are in the process of coming to Bethlehem for the Christmas festivities?
The estimate from the Palestinian Ministry of Tourism is that they're expecting about 10,000 pilgrims on December 24th and 25th.
What about the Christian community? I mean, how badly is it suffering? You mentioned there, of course, you know, the security barrier and how it restricts everybody's movements. Is unemployment very high?
Yes, unemployment is considerably higher than you would like. It's not as bad as it was 2 or 3 years ago. What we find is our graduates in general find work, but it's slow. They don't walk straight out the door and into work.
Are many Christian families continuing to emigrate then to escape, as I say, these restrictions posed by the security barrier and the general lack of easy employment, plus, of course, the stalemate in the Israeli-Palestinian peace process?
I don't have concrete figures. My impression is that the immigration is not as severe as it was some time ago. And one of the things I notice at the university is that the number of Christian applicants each year continues to climb. Not rapidly, but it's going up. I believe that what's really happening here is the absolute number of Christians in the last few years is actually increasing. The problem, however, though, is the Muslim population is increasing faster. So we see a decline in the percentage of Christians, while the absolute number, I think, is going up slowly. But that's not usually mentioned when people talk about the problem of immigration.
Okay, staying on the theme of problems, we mentioned earlier the security barrier and how this has basically cut off Bethlehem from the nearby city of Jerusalem and heavily restricted movements. I mean, can you give us some examples of how this security barrier impacts on the daily life of people who live in and around Bethlehem?
Well, people who actually live in the West Bank cannot leave the West Bank without permission of the Israelis. So if someone would like to visit Israel, say for a doctor's appointment, they first of all have to get permission here to go to Jerusalem. That sometimes takes days or weeks to obtain, and then it's limited for a few hours in which they can go through the security barrier, go to Jerusalem for the business, and then they usually have to be back by 7 p.m. that evening. I noticed Israel advertised in the paper the other day that they're going to be allowing a certain number of Christians to attend Mass in Jerusalem for the Feast of Christmas. They're making a big issue out of allowing a certain number. We'll try to make it look like things aren't quite as bad as they are. But on a day-to-day basis, many of our faculty haven't been to Jerusalem for 3 or 4 years just because of the hassle that's involved every time they want to do it.
Well, you talk about hassle. Before the security barrier was built, how long did it take somebody to drive from Bethlehem to Jerusalem? And, you know, what are the hassles that they have to contend with now?
Well, when I first arrived, which was 1991, there was no barrier between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. There's no checkpoint. In March of 1993, the checkpoint appeared. And at first, it was just a jeep and two soldiers. But it gradually became more and more bigger operation, more barrier, more elaborate. About 4 years ago, a huge, huge checkpoint was built where people on foot have to walk through a security barrier. People driving have to stop, show passports, have their car inspected, and then proceed on. So the center of Jerusalem, about 5 miles from Bethlehem. So, you know, it used to be about a 10 to 15 minute drive. Now, in addition to that drive, I always give myself at least 15, 20 minutes extra time. But I'm fortunate. I have an American passport that gets me through. Palestinians in a totally different situation. They often just don't try to go anymore. Most have just given up. It just isn't worth the hassle. And so they're confined to Bethlehem. Sometimes even traveling within the West Bank can be very difficult, too, because to go from Bethlehem to Ramallah, right now it's open, but the checkpoint could pop up. They have what they call flying checkpoints that pop up occasionally. So it really does trap them.
Let's turn to the focus of the Christmas celebrations in Bethlehem, the Church of the Nativity and Manger Square. Can you briefly paint us a picture of the church and the square for those listeners like me who've never seen it? And their main features.
The church is one of the oldest in the world, and it was built by St. Helena, the mother of Constantine, in 327 and was completed in the year 333. It survived for quite a while in that form, but in 565, the church built by St. Helena was leveled, but then it was rebuilt in 565. It's a large building. It has a main asp and then two side columns. The altar is where you'd expect it in most churches, and immediately below the altar is the crypt, which is the cave in which historically it's said that that's where the child Jesus was born. The church itself sits adjacent to Manger Square, which is not terribly large. It may be the size of a football field or a soccer pitch, and that's the center of Bethlehem. That's where all of the Christmas activities take place. That's where the patriarch comes through as he comes from Jerusalem to Bethlehem on Christmas Eve. And it's a very festive occasion at the Christmas time each year. A parade of scouts and local dignitaries are included in the procession. And that usually takes place the afternoon of Christmas Eve, so the patriarch comes and celebrates the Midnight Mass later that day.
And how many people generally attend the Midnight Mass? I imagine it must be extremely popular, as you say, definitely the highlight.
Yes, it's very crowded. This is kind of a guess, but probably the capacity of the church would be in the neighborhood of 500 people. The Midnight Mass is actually held in St. Catherine's Church, which is the immediately adjacent to the Basilica of the Nativity. You can go inside, you can go from one church to the other. But the Basilica of the Nativity is administered by the Greek Orthodox, the Roman Catholic, and Armenian Orthodox together. But it serves as the parish church for the Greek Orthodox. And St. Catherine's, which is immediately adjacent to it, serves as the parish church for the Roman Catholics, or the Latin Catholics, as they usually call it, referred to here. It's in St. Catherine's that the Midnight Mass is held.
You talked about the fact that the crypt underneath, which is historically believed to be the place where Jesus was born, what does that consist of? Can you sort of describe that for us?
Yes, it's not very big. The total room maybe would be 10 meters long and 5 meters wide, although it's not rectangular since it was a cave. There's a set of steps coming down on one side, and then there's a star, a silver star, which marks the spot of the birth under the main altar, and then there's another set of steps leading up the other side, so the pilgrims coming often stand in line for quite a while to be able to go down a very narrow, steep steps to the location of the cave. They're able to spend a few minutes there in adoration and then move up the steps on the opposite side. On Christmas Day, after the Midnight Mass, Masses are celebrated almost continuously for a full day in the crypt. The number of people that it could hold at any one time would be 20, 25 people, something like that, could be in that room at one time for a Mass, and then half hour later, a second Mass. And that continues during most of the day.
Coming back to the general situation in Bethlehem, when you go about and talk to people there, how do people, particularly the Christian community, feel about their future? Do they feel that this small Christian community can survive there in the town where Jesus was born? Do they feel relatively or cautiously upbeat about the future?
Well, they're determined they're going to stay. That's the attitude, the response you get from most of the Christian people is that, you know, we're here, Bethlehem is our hometown. We're going to stay. We're not going to leave. And that's very strong. At the same time, when we look at what's been called the peace process, that there just isn't much in the way of hope. We don't see any way forward. None of the things that have been done in the last few years seem to indicate that there's going to be a future Palestinian state. People are patient. They hope it's going to happen. They pray for it to happen. The American activities to try to reach a settlement with the Israelis to stop building the settlements that stopped because there was no success there. I think the way most people feel about it is that Israel is not interested in peace, and unless the Americans force them to do something, there just is not going to be any Palestinian state because Israel doesn't want a Palestinian state, and they're willing to do whatever they can to try to prevent it. The hope for a long time has been the Americans, and maybe now a little bit more outreach to the rest of the international community, but the people here have been disappointed again and again and again, and so they don't get their hopes up. They want something to happen. They pray something will happen, but they don't see what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. So they're mostly just, we'll stay, we'll do what we can, we'll try to get along with our lives as best we can. And I suppose that's one of the positive things about the people here is that they don't let it get them down on a day-to-day basis. They continue on with their lives. They get their education. They get married. They have children. They have families. They live their life under the shadow of the occupation, hoping that it will end soon, but not seeing exactly how that's going to happen.